A couple of minutes up to the hour. Let's go through a quick couple of emails and texts here, Fedsy. Pauline says, my laptop can't pick up my Wi-Fi provider. My iPhone and my iPad are connected. My laptop views other Wi-Fi to connect, but doesn't show my service provider. What's the problem there?
Okay, it's difficult to know. I mean, with a Wi-Fi connection, the device has to physically be able to detect the wireless signal. So you know when you've got a Wi-Fi capable device, be it a smartphone or a tablet or a computer, there'll be a screen on the computer where it will show you all the Wi-Fi signals that it's seeing. So the first question is it seeing it? If it's seeing it but then not able to utilize it, it could just be as simple as the fact that you have to, the first time that you attach that device to that Wi-Fi, you have to input the password. And the reason for that is to stop, you know, anyone passing by from using your Wi-Fi. It's sort of security locked with a password. So it could be as simple as the fact that you need to just put in the right password, or that it's become corrupted and the password's fallen off and it needs to be restated. So the first step is, you know, is your device seeing it? Have a look at that. If it's not seeing it, then you've got a problem. It could be that the wireless circuit in your laptop, the driver in it has become damaged. So a computer is like a giant Meccano set. It's full of all these different components, and for the operating system to know how to communicate with a particular Wi-Fi circuit, there's a small piece of software written specifically for that combination called a driver. And sometimes those drivers become damaged, sometimes they get unintentionally uninstalled, so the computer loses the capability of using that circuit. It could be a sound circuit, it could be a video circuit, anything could cease to work. So what you need to do is make sure you've got up-to-date drivers, which you can do, and make sure that they're correctly installed.
Okay, hope that helps you, Pauline. This one from Ian Fevesy. He says, our Windows PC has F-Secure as antivirus, which is due to expire. Can you recommend another antivirus program, or is the current one satisfactory?
Okay, so F-Secure is a reputable provider of security solutions, so you may choose to continue. Just be aware that when you've got something that's coming to the end of its subscription, you can pay for a following subscription for the following year, and that will give you access to the definitions of new viruses and new threats, but it doesn't necessarily give you any new features that may have been created by F-Secure. So sometimes it can be better, rather than just simply paying, you know, for another year's subscription, it can be better to rebuy the latest version of the software, and it can be the same price or even cheaper. So it's worth, because you know how it is, some people just will renew a subscription without checking the price. Often the prices of those renewals is not very competitive, and it can be cheaper to rebuy the software, even if it is from F-Secure again, if you like the software and the way it works. But and then you'll not only have access to the you know, protection against the latest viruses for another year, but you may also have some great new features as well. So for example, it may not only protect your computer, they may also offer you in a bundle protection of your smartphone and tablet, so that you can have extra features. So that's worth looking at. In terms of alternatives, you know, there are, you know, some companies that I would recommend. Symantec produce Norton software. I've always or at least in recent years found that to be excellent. For those that like to, you know, be a bit more high end about their protection and tweak the settings, ESET is good, ESET. You know, those are other ones I would look at. Kaspersky has also got a good reputation in terms of the protection that it gives as well.
Okay. Brian on the text says, my Sky TV hard drive never turns off. This is my second Sky Plus box. The service people say this is normal. Why?
Yeah, it is normal. So Sky boxes are designed to have the drive continually rotating. That is for a number of reasons. I mean, that's not to say that the drive doesn't sort of try and conserve energy, it does. It means that the drive is always available and you don't have that situation where it's sort of gone to sleep and then needs to wake up, because that can take time. Also, shutting off a drive and starting it again, you know, stopping it and starting it, that can often shorten the life of the drive more than keeping the drive spinning. It's a bit counterintuitive. It's a bit like when you turn on a fluorescent light bulb. Mm. There's a surge of energy that it uses to get started, and therefore, in certain circumstances, and it depends on how long you would switch it off for. But if you were going to switch it off for a short period and turn it back on again, in energy terms, it can actually be more efficient to just keep it running. So that's what they do. That's the design of it. That's not uncommon. I think this will become less of a problem in the future as the rotating conventional hard drives in these devices get replaced by what are called solid state drives, which have no moving parts. They do the same thing, albeit more quickly. But eventually, when solid state drives become even cheaper and more ubiquitous, then that will be less of an issue, because then it will only use a fraction of the power even when it's the drive is active.
Okay. Let's take another call now from Simon in Liverpool. Simon, you've got a question about a VPN. Before you give it to Fevzi, just explain to me, Fevzi, what is a VPN?
Okay, well, this is a very important thing, and we're going to be talking a lot more about these things in the future. So VPN stands for Virtual Private Network, and it is a way for a computer user or the user of a mobile phone or tablet attached to the internet to connect to another computer over the internet securely. So imagine, normally when you attach to the internet and you log on to a particular website, so you're attaching to a computer, yeah, running a server, running a particular website, your stream of data to and fro is bouncing all over the place from server to server to server, and it's not secure. It's quite easy for people to look into that data stream and see what you're up to. With a VPN, it was traditionally used by business users who wanted the best security. And imagine it's just a tube. Think of it as a tube of data tube that goes directly between you and the computer that you're attaching to, and anyone outside that tube can't look in, can't see the data that's flowing.
Okay, yeah, I got it.
And so why is this important? It's important for a number of reasons. First of all, I personally would never use public Wi-Fi in a cafe or anywhere else without using a VPN, because it's very easy for other people on that public Wi-Fi network to look at what you're doing. It's not secure. The other reason for this is that we now have laws in this country that say that internet service providers have to keep tabs on us just in case the government wants to see what we've been up to. But there are all sorts of legitimate reasons for wanting our privacy. And one way in which we can have more privacy is to use a VPN, because then even your internet service provider doesn't necessarily know who you are. You can appear to be in a different place, a different country, and it gives you an extra layer of privacy. I think for that reason, people are going to be increasingly in this country turning to VPNs.
Fine. Well, Simon has turned to VPN, and Simon, what's your issue with it?
I just want to say the reason I've used a VPN for the first time in my life is a direct result of the Snoopers Charter, which the gentleman, I think, is way ahead of me in knowledge. I've got nothing to hide. It's just the sheer number of agencies that have access to my computer. Anyway, the VPN I'm using is, I've got four different types of protocol. I was wondering if you could tell me through the best to use. I've got, is it double PTP or double STP or OpenVPN or IKEV2? And I can connect via any one of those four protocols. I was wondering if you could tell me what would be best.
Yeah, do you know, I'll be quite honest, I don't know the answer to that. I tend to use the defaults. I mean, the important thing is to use a VPN, and the rest of it is somewhat detailed. You're not going to, I mean, you can experiment with it, but I don't know that one is, quantitatively going to be better than the other. But
right.
What I will do, because I don't know the answer to that, if if you can maybe tweet me a message about this, and I can get back to you via
okay.
Twitter. You can get me on @GadgetDetective. If you tweet me via that, I'll look into it and make sure I give you a good steer as opposed to a guess. My general advice is, try it and see if there are performance differences first of all.
Well, because, what was your tweet again? Sorry,
@GadgetDetective.
Okay,
so
thanks very much.
I'm happy to help you via that. But the important thing is that you do use a VPN. And it's very interesting what you said about, privacy and I've got nothing to hide. People sometimes say, if you've got nothing to hide, you have nothing to fear. But actually, the truth of it is there is a concept of privacy. There is a reason why we draw our curtains at night and why we close the bathroom door. We do have an expectation of privacy.
I don't know why the ambulance need to have access to my internet history or the job centre. There's a lot of agencies out there.
Yeah, I think Food Standards Agency.
A lot of chefs might spoil the broth, shall we say.
Yeah, so I think what's being alluded here, just to explain, is that we now have legislation that was brought in recently in the vernacular known as the Snoopers Charter, and it has put new obligations on our internet service providers, for example, to keep a record of all the websites that we visit. Therein lies the way to people being blackmailed and so forth. And it will be interesting that, it may be politicians may find themselves falling foul of their own legislation at some point. Because, first of all, there is the concern, as has been said, that, there's a wide range of agencies. So it's not just about, if you're a terrorist threat or something. I mean, the Food Standards Agency has access to this. The London, I think the Welsh Ambulance Service has access to this data about our browsing history. Why do they need that? But also, once this information is being held by the internet service provider, which it now needs to be by law, it's a honeypot for hackers. It's a sitting target. It's only a matter of time before those internet service providers are hacked, and that information about our surfing history, our communications history, all the metadata surrounding who we contact, who we're friends with, who we ring at 1 in the morning, and they can build a picture of your life by combining all various pieces of information. Sometimes the information in and of itself seems innocuous, but when combined, it serves as a limitation on freedom of speech, freedom of thought, and for that reason, it's a sort of citizen's tool now that people start to use VPNs.
Okay, we've got Tony in Hampshire on the line, and Tony, you've got a question for Fevzi about a good printer for photos.
Yeah, my daughter's 16. Hello.
Hello.
She's going to college this year, and she wants to go on to uni and do photography. Can you recommend a good printer for, good quality pictures?
Well, okay, so you need to decide on the approach. So you're assuming that the best way is to have a photo printer. That gives you the flexibility of being able to print and experiment with your prints directly. But photo printers, which will typically use ink, so you can get photos printed on a colour laser. That would not be my recommendation. I'd go for a colour inkjet printer, but one that's specifically designed for photos and not just, a general purpose one. Epson have been making very good ones of those for many years, and the photo range of printers. However, they are expensive to run, and especially some of these specialist printers can get expensive, and they're limited because they're limited by the size of the print that you can get, the page it will take. Another approach is with modern technology, it's not like sending the film to the chemist and wondering what you're going to get back. Using digital photography, you can see on the screen of whatever device what those pictures look like. You can manipulate them to your heart's content. You can Photoshop the hell out of them and make them just so. And then you basically send it, electronically or physically to a service that will print them for you. And very often you'll get better results because you're giving it to a professional photo printer. Now, yes, it costs money to print each one, but you have to offset against the cost of buying the printer in its first place.
Yeah.
And The cost of running, the total cost of ownership of some of these printers is frightening. And there was some research that said that the per cubic centiliter of ink, that it was more expensive than Dom Perignon champagne in some cases. Not that you'd want to drink it, but you know, just be aware that when you buy any sort of printer, you have to look at the total cost of ownership over the life of the printer. That's not just buying it and feeding it with paper; it's also feeding it with ink. And you have to buy specialist photo paper as well. If you try and print a photo on a standard piece of paper, even if it's a glossy piece of paper, it's not going to give
you...
So I mean, if you want to go down that path, you know, have a look at the Epsons. They would be my favourite. But just be aware that you may be better off just having
turning them off.
Yeah, or just having a sort of a cheap to run colour printer for sort of rough prints, but the really good stuff be printed you know, on a separate service. And some of those services, you know, you send it electronically and they turn it around in 24 hours, so you know, it can be more cost effective to do it that way, and you can end up with better results. So if you've got a student of photography or something like that, you know, that might be an ideal solution for them, I think.
Okay. Question from Twitter here from Treeboard Tims says, my TV has built-in Wi-Fi. Is there any way of disconnecting it apart from switching it off completely? It's draining my Wi-Fi.
I'm sorry, what was the device that has built-in Wi-Fi?
A TV that has built-in Wi-Fi.
Okay. It will depend upon the television set. You can usually switch off the Wi-Fi. But did we say that it was draining the...
Yeah, draining my Wi-Fi, it says.
I'm not sure what we mean by draining the Wi-Fi. It could be that it's taking up bandwidth, but then it would only be using that resource if you were actually, you know, transmitting something via Wi-Fi. But yes, it should be possible to switch it off. It should be in the menus that you can actually disable the Wi-Fi. But I wonder what it's doing. It may be interfering with Wi-Fi, perhaps. So if you've got other we touched on this earlier. If you've got Wi-Fi devices, they can interfere with each other. It's just like, imagine that these devices are shouting their signals, and just imagine that you've got all these things shouting in the room, and then you
all
can't
arguing
actually
with each other.
And you can't hear the one that you want, and it's like that, but with wireless signals that you can't actually hear. But it's a similar sort of principle.
Okay. Yeah. John on the email says, I have a 7-year-old iMac. Recently, it started freezing for a few seconds, sometimes up to a minute. The cursor spins and it sounds like it's accessing the disk. I'm worried that it had a virus, but Norton says it's okay. It's all backed up okay. Should I be worried that the disk is going to fail soon?
Yes, I would, because 7 years is, you know, definitely in the territory where you would expect a good percentage of 7-year-old hard drives to fail. So, you know, that sort of spinning symbol can be indicative. It can be various reasons, but one of the things it can be, it's trying to read a particular piece of data and it keeps failing because the data is corrupt or the drive is damaged in that area. So the surface of a disk is divided into sectors, and some of those sectors can become physically damaged, but also the drive itself may be failing in other ways. So 7 years old, you need to make sure you've got regular backups, because that drive will fail at some point. Even if it's not on its way out now, it's a good wake-up call to do the backups. The thing about iMacs is that the drives in them are not always easily accessible, so you could look at you know, maybe using an external drive. And one of the nice things about Macs is that you can start it up from an external drive, so you can boot it up, as they say, from an external drive. So what you could do is actually stop using that drive for anything important. Install a Mac OS operating system on an external drive, connect that external drive to the Mac, and when you switch it on, it will start using the external drive, both to load up the operating system but also to save and retrieve your own files. And if you can do that, and Macs are quite advanced in that compared to PCs, that ability to do that. So if you can do that, that would be a good sort of good end around the problem.
Okay.
And also use a drive to do a full backup of your data.
Okay, good advice there, Fev. So I've just got a couple of minutes left now, so we're going to take a very quick phone call from Ivan, who's in St Albans. Ivan, what's your question for Fevzy?
Hello, Rachel. Hello, Percy. Hello, what do you know? I'm a blind person, and I've been nearly blind for 25 years. I've got no sight at all. And a lot of the gym people have a headphones in, and at least they can see. But I wonder if there's a contraption for a blind person, because I need... I don't like their music, what they play in the gym anyway, and I could put so I could have a bit of music with the ear, but I can hear where if anyone's on the machines. I'm sort of keep myself reasonably fit. I'm in my 60s now, but I need something to sort of to unwind and socialise with.
Okay, any ideas on that?
So you want something to listen to that you can control without having sight of it? Is that essentially the?
Well, that's right. I wonder if there's anything that can go around the ears, but I need my ear in to hear if anybody is on the machines, because I can't be blind and deaf, because it's at this point, so I wouldn't be able to, it wouldn't be fair for the people in the gym and myself.
I understand.
Want a little bit of music that I could have, maybe I'm sort of from the old school. What you've talked about this morning, you've lost me anyway.
Oh, I'm sorry about that.
Sort of a Betamax fan, you know what I mean? I'm sort of a Timex in the digital world. You know?
Right, you've got about a minute and 30 seconds to come up with something here for Ivan.
So, Ivan, this requirement of being able to hear the outside world is largely down to the type of headphones that you use. So what you don't want is the over-the-ear type, or what they call closed-back headphones that will tend to stop sound getting in. What I'd suggest to you are the little earbuds that fit inside the ear. They'll give you reasonable sound, but will it also allow you to hear what's going on? And if necessary, you can pop one out and just listen on one ear if that's what you want to do. In terms of the devices, you can either go for a basic MP3 player where the button layout uses physical buttons and you know where they are and you can use it in that way, or you can go technologically to the other extreme and use something like a smartphone, where you could have voice control of it and it could read you everything on the screen as well. And iPhones, but also other phones, have very good accessibility options that let people who are vision impaired, for example, to be able to operate the device.
Okay, brilliant stuff. Well, as ever, Fevzy, you've made me feel very technically deficient this morning.
I'm sorry, then I failed. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, no. I failed, on the other hand. Thank you very much for being with us. Fevzy Turkalp there from gadgetdetective.com, answering some of your technical and gadget-related inquiries. He'll be back again on Up All Night very, very soon.
On digital and online.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
bbc.co.uk/5Live.